Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting EXIT PLAN with no spaces to 44222. That's EXIT PLAN to 44222. Again, text EXIT PLAN to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey everyone, thanks so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure. I think you're going to really enjoy today's show. We have some great guests lined up. And my first guest has written a new book we're going to talk about, Michelle Seiler Tucker. She's the founder and CEO of Seiler Tucker Incorporated. And we're going to talk about how to build a sustainable, scalable, and sellable business utilizing her proven techniques outlined in her newest book called Exit Rich. And interesting thing about Michelle is she's been in business for 20 years out of New Orleans, Louisiana, helping business owners sell their businesses. So she has a lot of great experience when it comes to helping business owners get ready for the sale. And we're really looking forward to having her comments in just a few minutes. Now, the other thing I wanted to tell you is that we've now interviewed close to 1,600 advisors over the last several years. And if you haven't caught any of our past episodes, you can go to exitcoachradio.com and check out all the great content there. Just dig around, find something to listen to, 20-minute interviews while you're driving or exercising or just hanging around these days to help you learn how to have a better and stronger business. Again, for that day when you're thinking about selling your business. So I'm going to bring Michelle on right now, and we'll get to talking about her and her practice and her business. Michelle, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Bill. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I am good. I'm good. Thank you. Yeah, pleasure to have you. I was telling our listeners that you've been in business for over 20 years and you help business owners sell their businesses with a very high success rate, and that you've written this new book, Exit Rich, that we're going to talk about. Fill in the gaps. Tell us more. Tell us more about Michelle and what you and your firm have done over the last several years and how you help folks.
Sure. So I, you know, before I got into selling businesses, I did franchise sales, franchise consulting, and franchise development, and sold hundreds and hundreds of franchises. And then I transitioned into selling companies, first small businesses, but then very quickly transitioned into selling businesses for $10 million and up. And then I also learned very quickly, though, that what Steve Forbes says is true, 8 out of 10 businesses don't sell. So I started really specializing in fixing businesses, growing businesses, and putting business owners on a build-to-sell program, because if I didn't do that, I would probably starve to death. So we really, really specialize in buying, selling, fixing, growing businesses. Sometimes I buy businesses and flip them. I also partner with business owners, investing my money, my expertise, my resources, and put them on a 3 to 5 year build-to-sell exit strategy. And we've sold over 1,000 businesses. And so we have a new book out called Exit Rich. And Exit Rich is all about the blueprint of how to plan your exit from day one of starting your business and how to build the infrastructure using the 6 P's.
That's a very interesting background. And one thing I talk about a lot, Michelle, is how important it is, even if you're not a franchise, to have your business in ready for sale shape, so it kind of looks like a franchise, if you will. You know, all of your information in one place, well organized. Talk to us a little bit about the biggest things, obstacles you found when you switched from the franchise world to the general business world. That'd be very interesting.
Well, I mean, it's a completely different world, because selling franchises, I was doing franchise sales, new franchises, not existing franchises. So when I transitioned from selling franchises to existing businesses, everything was different, because when you're selling new franchises, you're not dealing with financials. You're not dealing with existing employees. You're not dealing with existing customer base, inventory, et cetera. You're dealing with, in new franchise sales, you're dealing with demographics, making sure you do the due diligence, find the right locations, making sure, you know, that the build-out, working with the contractors on the build-out, working with the franchisor to get the equipment in, the inventory, et cetera. Dealing with an existing business, you're dealing with everything from people to processes to their inventory, their assets, you know, and environmental issues. The list goes on and on. So it's really not even apples to apples. It's apples to oranges.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see business owners make?
So first and foremost, it's business owners don't think about selling until they have to due to an internal or external catastrophic event, you know, meaning health issues, death, partner disputes, divorce, external, COVID. And when you're trying to sell during a catastrophic event, your business is typically not doing well. It's typically trending downward. And that's the worst time to sell your business because your business is not going to be worth what you want. Many sellers will come to me and say, hey, I want $10 million for my company. And their EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, is all of $100,000. So business owners think about the value of their business based upon what they need in which to retire or buy another business or whatever, you know, their beginning strategy is. Buyers don't care about what sellers need. Buyers care about what the value is to them. So that's one of the biggest mistakes. The other big mistake is that business owners don't really build a business that someone wants to buy. Most business owners have created a glorified job in which they go to work at every day versus a business that actually works for them. And they haven't built a business, like I said, that a buyer wants to buy. Buyers don't want to buy a job. They want to buy a business that functions on all six cylinders, all six speeds.
Those are two really big areas. And, of course, you mentioned the statistic that we hear about all the time, that 8 out of 10 business owners that go to say, hey, I want to sell my business, walk away, I call it dejected and rejected, either rejected because they're not attractive, like you said, to a potential buyer. So the intermediary, whether it's a business broker or a M&A advisor, says, hey, no, we're not going to take you on. Or the business owner finds out, like you said, the value is so low because of their lack of preparation, perhaps, and good financial strategies, that they're just not going to get what they want out of it. So what are some of the other reasons that you found that businesses don't sell in that 8 of 10 category where they just don't end up going to market?
So I'll take you through the six P's because the six P's will help illustrate why businesses don't sell. So the first P is people. Most business owners have, like I said, created a job, not a business, and most owners work in their business, not on their business. Buyers do not want to buy a job unless you have a healthy staff, unless you have the right people in the right positions, unless the business owner has answered the who question, who opens the doors, who deals with marketing, who deals with client services, who deals with legal, accounting, logistics, transportation, manufacturing, etc. They don't want to buy the business. And the bottom line is you should never be next to the who. So we really work with our business owners to create a business that can run without them, not be dependent upon them, make sure that they have the right people in the right position. We work with our entrepreneurs to make sure they focus on their strengths, hire their weaknesses, so that they have the staff in place. Because you don't build a business, you build people, and people build a business. So that's the number one reason why businesses don't sell, is because when I take the owner out of the business, there is no business. You know, we have a dentist that came to us, been in business 45 years, and it's one dentist, two dental hygienists. His business is not sellable. Or if we do sell it, he's going to have to stay on for 2 to 3 years, and the price will be attached to how long he's willing to stay on. So that's the number one reason they don't sell. Then the second reason is product. You know, a lot of businesses are in a dying industry, especially now because of the pandemic. So you really have to look at your industry and, you know, ask yourself, are you on the way up or on the way out? Is your product an Amazon or is your product a Blockbuster? And if, you know, a lot of buyers are not going to buy businesses that are in dying industries. And then the third, you know, issue is the third P is processes. And processes are really big. And a lot of companies are not efficient, not productive because they don't have processes in place. They're not systematic. And so we really work with our clients to make sure that they design those processes with the customer experience in mind, that they're productive, they're efficient, and most importantly, that the employees are well trained on such processes and that they have the policy and procedure manuals and the SOPs. We're literally selling a $60 million company right now that does not have policy and procedure manuals. And they really do not have systematic policies and procedures. So that's huge. And then the other P is proprietary. You know, our buyers want to buy a business that has proprietary assets. There's five different types of buyers. And buyers will pay more money for intellectual property than anything else. You know, the more branded a company is, the more I can sell the business for. It's just like, you know, as long as that brand is relevant in the mind of the consumers, nobody's paying any money for Blockbuster. But Apple is the biggest brand in the world, the most valuable brand in the world. The brand alone is worth $249 billion. That's just a brand. Trademarks are extremely valuable. We're selling another company that has products in several different grocery retail stores, chain stores, and each one of their retail chains has an exclusive product, and it has a trademark. So that's huge. You know, clients will pay a lot of money for that. And then the other thing is patents. Patents are big. And do you ever watch Shark Tank?
Sure, all the time.
Bill? So what's the question that every single investor always asks every single inventor? Do you have a patent on that? Do you have a patent pending? Do you have a utility patent? So patents are huge. Contracts. This is another, you know, another big thing. Contracts are very valuable. Manufacturing contracts, distribution contracts. Franchisor that has franchisees, any type of exclusive contracts. The most valuable of all are the client contracts. But the biggest issue with contracts and the reason deals fall apart is because most owners don't have the two-sentence transferability clause in their contract that says that this contract will transfer over to the new entity. So 99.9% of all deals are asset sales, not stock sales. If the buyer is not willing to do a stock sale, and the clients are not willing to sign transfer agreements, then the deal can fall dead in its tracks. Another thing that's very valuable, I mean, your business could be losing money, and I can still sell your business for millions if you have a database. And if that database has you know, hundreds of thousands of users, it can be repurposed and retargeted. Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp, and WhatsApp was hemorrhaging money. Celebrity endorsements are big. Any type of e-commerce businesses, if they have the top three positions on Wayfair, Etsy, Amazon, this is all IP real estate that can take your business from a 5 multiple to a 10 multiple of EBITDA. And then the fifth piece is, go ahead.
Please finish up with that. That's great. It's great information.
The fifth P is patrons, and this is also where a lot of business owners fall short. Because most businesses follow the 80-20 rule where 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your clients. And if you lose a client, you could be in big trouble. So customer concentration is the kiss of death. You know, we have one business we're trying to sell right now for in the $70 to $80 million range, and they have 70% customer concentration. We have another business that we sold not that long ago, did appraised for $9.8 million. They have 65% of their revenue tied up in BP contracts. We have 550 buyers, 12 letter of intents, but we found a strategic that has similar products and services. Everybody else was petrified about the 65% customer concentration except for them. So they wanted to outbid everybody else because they had been trying to get their products and services in the BP for years and was never successful. So they ended up outbidding everybody else and paying $15 million for 70% of the company, which is 126% more than what the business appraises for.
Incredible.
And then
incredible.
The last
great
profit. Yeah.
One more P. We got one more. This number
profits.
Six, right?
Profits. Profits is number six. The most important thing to all entrepreneurs is profits. But here's the thing about profits. Profits is never the problem. It's always a symptom of not operating on one of the other five P's. I have clients that come to me all the time and say, Michelle, I have a profit problem. I'm like, no, you have a people problem. Or no, you have a process issue. So profits are never the problem, always a symptom.
Excellent overview, very noteworthy. I hope our listeners have been taking notes like I have. Great information. Now, you have a book out, and it's called Exit Rich. Well, you know, one of the things you talk about is using the STGPS exit model. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and why it's important to plan your exit strategy from day one using the GPS exit model from Siler Tucker?
Absolutely, Bill. So the number one reason it's imperative that you plan your exit from day one of starting or buying a business is because you want to build a sellable asset. When you're ready to, look, I just hung up with a client that's been in business for 40 years. He said, Michelle, I can't do it anymore. I am so burned out. I just can't do it one more day. You don't want to get to that point. And even if you think I'm never going to sell my business, if you build your business with the end in mind that you want to sell your business, then you're going to have a much more sustainable, scalable, and when you're ready, sellable asset. So here's what I tell clients to do is follow the GPS exit model. Whenever you want to drive somewhere, Bill, what's the first thing we all do? We pull out our phone, we go to Google Maps, and we plug in our
destination.
Destination. Yep, we plug in our destination. The problem with business owners is they don't plan to fail. They fail to plan. So therefore, they have no destination in mind whatsoever. They're driving around in circles. They're driving up and down the financial hills to end up nowhere or end up having to sell for pennies on the dollar, close their business, or even worse, file bankruptcy. So I want all business owners to sit down and figure out your end game, your destination. Where do you want to end up at? Let's say, and pick your desired sales price. Let's say you want to sell your business for $20 million. Great. Now we have a number. You might not hit it. You might hit it. You might exceed it. But it's a start. Business owners need to start a plan. So let's say it's $20 million. Now the next thing you need to know in your GPS exit model is where you're starting from. What's your current location? What's your current evaluation? What is your business worth? And the problem with most business owners is they never get a business evaluation. You know, us humans go to the doctor and get an annual checkup to make sure our body is in good health. We drive our car to the shop to make sure our car gets an annual checkup tune-up, but we never get a business evaluation. All business owners should have an annual valuation checkup. There are events that can increase your valuation. There are events, such as COVID, that can decrease your valuation. So every year, you need to know what your business is worth. So let's say you're starting from $5 million. You want to sell for $20 million. Your current valuation is $5 million. Now you need to know time frame. Let's say you want to do this in 10 years. Now the next thing you need to know, well, who's my buyers going to be? Now, Bill, you notice how I say buyers and not buyer?
Mm-hmm.
You can never just have buyers. You can never just have one buyer. Because number one, that buyer will probably never come to fruition and will never close on the sale of your business. And number two, you can never maximize value with one buyer. You need multiple buyers, creating a bidding war, creating, you know, scarcity, creating competition. So buyers, there's five different types of buyers. Let me tell you who your buyer is not going to be. It's not going to be a first-time buyer because they buy smaller businesses. It's not going to be a turnaround specialist because they buy distressed assets. So it's going to be a PEG, a private equity group, a strategic or a competitor, strategic/competitor, or a serial entrepreneur who chases cash flow and are industry agnostic. Those are your five types of buyers. Then you have to figure out, okay, well, where do the financials need to be in order to sell for $20 million? Where does the top line revenue need to be? The gross profit margin, most importantly, the EBITDA, the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, has to be. If you want to sell for $20 million, it needs to be between $3 million and $4 million, or $3 million and $5 million, depending upon the synergies. Then you have to ask yourself, okay, if my buyers are going to be a private equity group, strategic and competitor, then what are the characteristics that they're looking for? What synergies do they buy? What are they willing to pay more money for? And then that's when you build your business based upon the infrastructure that we talked about with the six P's, and you build to meet these buyer-specific criteria. I can tell you almost any single buyer what they're looking for, what their negotiating points are, what their non-negotiating points are, and who will pay what for what synergies. And then the last step in that model is the why. If it was easy to sell a business for $20 million, Bill, everyone would be doing it. It's obviously not easy. So you have to have a powerful why to keep you in the game, to keep you motivated, to keep you weathering all the different financial storms and you know, the different catastrophic events. So that's the GPS exit model. It works if it's followed.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, we've covered, you have covered a lot of ground. I didn't do much. You did all the work in this interview. I really appreciate it, Michelle. The name of the book is Exit Rich. And listeners, you can find it by simply putting in exitrichbook.com. You can tell it's going to be an interesting read from this interview. Michelle, you covered so much terrific ground so effectively. I took a page full of notes, and I hope our listeners did too. And I hope your book does really well and that you'll come back and share some more information with us, because I think this is exactly the type of information our listeners love to listen to. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Everyone, can I tell everyone what they get when they go to extrovertsbook.com? Or do I have time?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go to extrovertsbook.com. We're in the middle of pre-sales for $24.79. We'll email you the digital download immediately so you can start reading it today. We will also send a hardcover to your doorstep upon launch date. We will give you a lifetime membership to the Exit Rich Book Club. There we have video content. If you like what you hear here, there's more video content there, plus documents. All the documents you need to run your business and sell your business. Sample employee handbooks, non-competes, or organizational charts, sample letter of intent agreements, sample purchase agreements, sample due diligence checklists, and purchase agreements. These documents alone, Bill, are worth over $25,000 if you had your attorney create everything. They're there for your review and your download. Plus, we're also giving everyone that buys the book now a 30-day membership, free membership in the Club CEOs, which is an entrepreneurial group that I started, where we do masterminds, hot seats, Q&A, so we can help business owners exit rich.
That's terrific. That's a great bargain. Thanks so much. Once again, Michelle, it's been a real pleasure. I look forward to the next time we speak.
Thank you, Bill. My pleasure.
And thank you for listening. It's a real pleasure to have you with us today. I'm going to roll on to my next guest, who is Todd Palmer. He's been with us before, from Extraordinary Advisors in Troy, Michigan. And Todd helps his clients ditch their comfort zone and dive into their failures and reframe their mindset to be more authentic, transparent, and vulnerable to affect real change along the path to success. A real pleasure to have you back once again. Todd, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me back. It's great to be here.
My pleasure. In our last interview, we talked a lot about COVID-19 and how it's affected businesses. How would you like to frame up what we want to talk about today?
You know, I think we can definitely start with COVID and how it's affected businesses, because what I've really witnessed, and I outline it in my new book, From Suck to Success, A Guide to Extraordinary Entrepreneurship, and how a lot of business owners that I'm coaching, a lot of business owners that I've worked with in the last 12 months have really decided that COVID is happening for them, not to them, allowing them to pivot their businesses and actually, in many cases, actually grow their businesses during these difficult times.
That's excellent. So, yeah, that's an interesting dynamic that humans have, right? They look around and see if there's a change, if it's a big change. First of all, it's like, how severe is the change? How long is it going to last? How much should we adapt? And those that adapt usually come back stronger than ever. So let's talk about that. Give us some discussions and examples of what you've been seeing out there and how our listeners can benefit from that wisdom.
For sure. And so I want to kind of take the listener back to how this all works. So if we're feeling something's happening to us, we're in a fight or flight mindset. We're actually using the reptilian part of our brain. When we pivot and commit to something happening for us, not to us, we're actually moving into the front cerebral cortex of our brain, and we're in a much more creative mindset. So probably the best example I can give you is my example. Last March and April, I was scheduled to speak from stage, six different stages, three different countries, and within 2 weeks, all events got canceled due to the pandemic. And I immediately became sad. I was bummed out. I was crushed. I was really looking forward to doing this, getting in front of my ideal audience, helping leaders become unstuck. What I decided to do is practice what I preach. I started applying my thought process into the active learning cycle. And what I did was I really doubled down on why I do what I do, my Ikigai. My Ikigai is two words, improve lives. That's 2 years working with Simon Sinek to find those two words of my why, my Ikigai, of improve lives. And I thought, where else can I do that? Fast forward, I started volunteering a tremendous amount. I spoke with 42 CEOs over 67 days, and I volunteered my time in 30-minute increments to help leaders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs get unstuck around what was happening to them in the pandemic and pivoting into a mindset of, this is actually happening for my business, and how can I live to survive and fight another day? And the crazy thing is, Bill, my business is up 300% in the last 12 months, and I actually was able to spend the time to complete my book, which became last week an international number one bestseller on Amazon.
Correct. Congratulations. What a great turnaround, and what a great benefit from focusing on improving lives.
And that's really for me what it's all about. I love it when I'm working with an entrepreneur, or even, you know, some of the free calls that I do with entrepreneurs are currently stuck, and seeing the light bulb go on and having them recognize and realize that there are different ways to approach things during this pandemic that allow us to get unstuck. I practice and teach a lot of inside-out leadership so that the entrepreneur, the CEO, the leader can feel empowered, not disempowered by what's happening to them, and then help them create the world they want, a life by design, by using the active learning cycle, our four-step process, helping them get unstuck. And, you know, I've seen such transformation around the globe that it really gives me a great perspective to see how we as a entrepreneurial culture can really continue to drive the world forward, even in the worst of times.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's, you know, CEOs are, you know, they're supposed to be looking forward, looking to what's the vision, where are we headed? But, you know, these days, I think a lot of people get mired down in that, you know, where are we? How long is this going to last? So what have you found? Where's the turning point for a lot of people? I see where it was for you. Where do you think the turning point for a lot of business owners, and what do they need to do to stop letting COVID happen to them and have it start happening for them, as you say?
Well, and you know, it's so powerful to see people, even in like tough hit industries like restaurant, retail, pivot out of that. And the first thing I always ask them is why they got into the business they're in. And we'll spend up to an hour to 2 hours talking about that. Because what that does, Bill, is it anchors them in on a psychological commitment level of why are they in this business. And inevitably, using the, you know, restaurant retail as an example, many, many, many restaurateurs got into the restaurant space because they'd like to create a great experience for the diners. They wanted to create community around food. So once we get them to the point of creating community around food or a great date experience, for example, I said, well, considering your brutal reality, you're not able to necessarily do that either in volume or some places for several months weren't able to do it at all in person. How else can you create that dining experience for someone elsewhere? And I was working with a high-end restaurateur on the West Coast, very much, you know, $300 tickets were his typical Saturday night per table per couple of hours. So he was doing well from a revenue perspective, but it required a lot of upkeep, required a lot of staff. We pivoted him into, I want to create a great dining date experience for the homeowner, and I want to do it in a way that's going to be even greater margins with less overhead. He created an upscale brand pizza that within 12 months was doing an average of 3 million per year on delivering high-end $40 pizzas to your home for date nights, for parties, for events that people were holding in their socially distant safe space. And he's doing it with one-third the staff. He's reduced his footprint from a rental and restaurant mm-hmm. space. And he's now loving what he does because he's able to do it on his terms, his way to create that great experience. He's creating this, he calls it his Saturday night date nights, 7 nights a week.
I love that. That's a great a great analogy, especially in a very hard hit business. And I was wondering that this morning. I go on a daily walk down. I live in a little beach community, and looking at the restaurants that have, you know, transitioned to outdoor dining, and wondering how are they doing? How are they still doing? And a lot of them have had to recreate pretty mightily in their business, but they're still, as you mentioned, going back to that why are you in business, and mm-hmm. continue to create that community or create that experience so that that customer will come back after things have changed and maybe you've created something better for your business that will sustain when you're getting your regular revenue in coming back too. So maybe your business is stronger than ever at the end of that. That's pretty brilliant.
Well, I love the entrepreneur who faces the problem head on. And I talk about this, you know, I liberally steal from Jim Collins and Good to Great, the Stockdale paradox, and you know, deal with our brutal reality, but have the resolve that somehow, some way, with massive intention, you can make these events the defining moment of your business, the defining moment of your life. And I'm going to tell you a quick story about how to make it a defining moment, not just for your business, but for your life. So, you know, I coach CEOs, entrepreneurs, and executives. I also am coached by a CEO executive coach. His name is Danny Friedman. He's a medical doctor out of San Diego, California. And he's literally one of the world's leading brain experts. He truly, you know, I can sit here and talk about the active learning cycle. I can talk about pivoting your mindset, but he can actually explain the science behind it. So I got very curious with him during these tough times, and we're working through some tough things. And then out of nowhere, last November of 2020, I get a phone call from him, and he's sharing with me that he's been diagnosed with stage 4 brain cancer. So the irony that one of the world's leading brain experts has brain cancer didn't escape either one of us. And he just said, I am going to let this, because I may have only 15 to 24 months left, but these are going to be the best 15 to 24 months of my life. I'm going to make a bigger impact into the world because I have decided that this cancer is happening for me, not to me. So since that diagnosis, Bill, he has doubled down on his coaching practice. He's putting out even more content. He calls it his Netflix channel on YouTube, where he's sharing on a daily basis what he's going through with cancer, how he's pivoting his mindset on a daily basis. Then his wife has joined the channel. His two sons have joined the channel. He graciously had me come on for an interview on the channel to share with people, how do we live our best life today? Because tomorrow's not guaranteed for any of us, but also, if we do know that our time is short, how do we live our best life now with our family now? And essentially, in many respects, he's teaching us how to transition to the next life with grace, dignity, and pride versus fear and doubt.
That's very interesting. And I think that having that sort of timeline, as tragic as it is, does put the kind of the fire under the individual to create not only something, realizing time is precious and creating something meaningful, but also thinking about legacy, how they'll be remembered, correct?
Yes. Oh, legacy is so key. And it's, you know, when I put the book out, I was explaining to somebody, because it took me 5 years and I went through, oh gosh, 7-8 rewrites in this thing to get it where I was really, it was important to me. And I remember I was talking with someone about it, and they asked me, why was I so passionate about quote unquote getting it right? I said, it's a legacy piece for me. It's a tombstone marker on the planet Earth that I was actually here. So yeah, it's very important to me that this comes out and is well received and provides immense value to people, or else why bother doing it? So I think legacy, especially as we consider how the world shifts and changes so greatly, and that, you know, tomorrow is not guaranteed. For me, with Danny's help, legacy has become one of the tombstones of the work I do.
I can imagine. Yeah, there's a lot of folks that have reached financial success, but now, especially in their families, and I deal with this a lot too, where I find the patriarchs or the great grandparents that are living now are saying, "We've done enough in our lifetime. Our children are going to be set. Our grandchildren, our great grandchildren. But what we want is for someday someone to say, I never met great-great-grandpa and grandma, but they must have been some incredible people to have left us all of, to have built and left us all of this, or left something behind."
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, as as entrepreneurs stage through their entrepreneurial journey, you know, a lot of us get started. I know I got started back in 1997 to build myself a job. And then I started building a company. And then I realized that in order to build a company, I had to build my next generation of leaders. And then those next generation of leaders had to build their next generation. And I really decided for me, part of my legacy is creating that entrepreneurial wake, that people behind my boat, so to speak, or that wake of the waves behind my boat. And now that I have the privilege of coaching the CEOs that I work with and having them figure out what their legacy means to them is such powerful work, because it could, in some respects, like you're saying, it can impossibly impact generations.
Well, and part of the, I think, you know, no one would say, you know, being an executive and building a company is a great legacy. You have, you know, a lot of families depending on you and continuing to to depend on you, and they'll probably hang your picture in the front office. But I think, do you agree that a lot of people turn to art type of things, whether it's written word or painted canvas or even music or something that they can leave behind as more of a visual, intellectual, or a pleasing sound, you know, something that people can go, that was my great, great grandfather. And while we're talking about that, I think we should segue into your book, because it sounds like that's what you've created with your new book, is a legacy yourself.
Well, and that's part of the motivation behind the doing the work was, you know, I certainly can create a legacy with the clients that I coach, and some of them have had phenomenal growth, not only in their businesses. I mean, I've got one client, his revenue, first year we were together, went up 70%. His profits increased 500%. But the real legacy that we have with this client is he now really loves what he does. He's actually working 4 days a week, not 7 days a week, and he's spending more time with his family, specifically his grandkids. And the time invested in a child, I think, is immeasurable in helping create that next generation of family members in our community. So there's that first piece of legacy. Second piece of legacy for me was, you know, in the book, I talk about the tough times I've had with my son. I'm a single dad. You know, being the child of an entrepreneur who is struggling can be tough, but also being the child of an entrepreneur who's seen by society's eyes. You know, when you make the Inc. 5000 six times in your community, you're kind of seen as successful. And there's a price to pay with that as well. So I talk about that. And then able to share the legacy of how we've created, my son and I have created a legacy together, has been powerful. And the last part I found was so important for me was to all the people in the book that I could highlight through that I've met, the coaches that I've had, the clients that I've had the blessing to be able to make an impact on, as well as the people who I've never met, like Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank and Jim Collins from Good to Great, and you know, all these people. You know, learning and raising an entrepreneur is a tribal experience, just like raising a child. So if I can contribute that legacy through my book, someone picks up my book in, you know, 60 years when chances are I'll be gone, and have them read about it and read some of the stories. You know, the common problem in business for me has always been the same thing. It's not cash. It's not strategy. It's not execution. It's always people. I don't think people are going to, you know, evolve that much in the next 30 to 40 to 50 years where the lessons in the book don't apply. So if I can leave that legacy behind and someone can say, huh, that book really made a difference in my life, I can't ask for more than that.
Well, you're striking some kind of a chord because you're a bestseller in many, many different categories, as I note here. And so the book is called From Suck to Success, A Guide to Extraordinary Entrepreneurship. And it's, again, it's been certified as a number one international bestseller. That doesn't happen by mistake. Why do you think people are loving this book so much? What kind of comments are you hearing?
Oh my gosh. So, well, thank you, first of all, for sharing that with your audience. It's been one of the most humbling experiences of my career. I think partially the book is landing with people because, you know, I speak from what I feel is a very authentic place. I start the book off by talking about some of the worst days of my life in my career. I don't walk, pick up the book and start off by saying, wow, this guy's, you know, above me in a spot where, you know, he had it all figured out. It was easy, and no tough road ahead for him. It's, my journey was very much that of the, you know, the failure's journey, then it turns into the hero's journey. And that authenticity, I've been told by people, really lands with them. They read the pages and they see themselves in the story. That's very touching for me to hear. I gave a preview copy to a friend of mine. He's a solopreneur. And he called me up, like, he had read it 3 times in less than 2 weeks. And we're talking on Zoom, and he's got the printed pages there from his printer, and he's got highlights and sticky notes. And he's like, oh my gosh, I thought I was the only one who went through all these struggles and challenges. I always saw you as this really successful guy, and I see us being very common. And I think so much, especially in a world where people are feeling still disconnected, if I can, through the book, if I can create a connection with the reader, they see themselves in the stories, they find hope in the stories, and at the end of each chapter, we apply the active learning cycle and ask the reader questions that they can self-coach and self-teach through the book. They can come out at the end of the book journey a changed person. Oh my gosh, I think who doesn't want to have that experience? At least that's the story I tell myself.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of people are interested these days. Let's face it, in some type of coaching, life coaching, getting better at what they do. I'm very involved with Vistage Worldwide. That's all about, you know,
paying
a lot of money to go get coached every month, right? So a lot of people are interested in that. So if they can sit down with someone who's telling them in this book, what things are, you know, how things can get better, what the experiences and what you've heard from people, and then have an exercise at the end. It sounds like a very worthwhile use of someone's time these days. So I think it's a tremendous feather in your cap. And are you doing a book tour now? What can you do these days with COVID with regards to this?
Well, here's what that's a great question, because my goal is really to improve lives, and I certainly would love to get, I got an opportunity recently on a similar group to Vistage, EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization, contacted me.
Excellent.
And they wanted me to go visit several chapters of their members across Canada. I can't leave Detroit to go to Canada. So, I would love to go speak and do that stuff. So here's what I have decided to do. I'm certainly being available for podcasts and radio programs and media experiences. But I also have decided that, for me to impact the world, for me to improve lives, the best way for me to do that is to give away chapters of the book. So I'm giving away the first chapter of the book on my website. Go to extraordinaryadvisors.com, get a free chapter, see if it fits for you, and certainly people then can go buy the book if it fits for them. I have done a lot of, like I said, a lot of podcasts, and I always want people to realize that, we are much more alike than we are different. I know some people who are wildly successful, companies close to $1 billion in revenue, who still suffer from imposter syndrome, and I talk about that in the book. I know people who that you recognize it by the stories, that you think they never had a problem in the world, and they talk about the challenges they have. What I wanted to do in the book is to kind of demystify success, to demystify the journey of entrepreneurship. That's why half the chapters in the book are devoted to taking inventory of our mindset, taking inventory of how we can be authentic, transparent, and vulnerable. How do we then, when we have recognized things that aren't working for us, what can we do to make the changes necessary to create the life by design we want? I know there's a lot of books out there where they kind of just throw out a bunch of different ideas, and the author maybe hasn't lived them. The people who all contributed to the book, whether it's Brian Scudamore, whether it's Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank, whether it's Tom Schwab from Interview Valet, Deb Gabor, all these great thought leaders, people we've heard of, have all lived the stuff we talk about in the book. It's not me being prescriptive. It's me as a coach hopefully creating generative questions within the minds of the readers, then allowing them at the end of each chapter to do self-coaching. Or I've had some people actually reach out and engage me for coaching services because they realize that this is something they desperately need in their lives. That gives me great joy.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Todd, it's great to talk with you again. I'm glad you checked back in and brought us up to date, and I wish you all the success in the world with the new book. And again, listeners, go to extraordinaryadvisors.com and check out that chapter that's on there, and take a look and get yourself a copy of the book. It'd be a fantastic read, I'm sure. And Todd, it's always great to talk with you and get brought up to date with what's happening in your life. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, Bill, thank you so much for the opportunity. I truly appreciate you.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to one of many shows on ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing advisors, authors, and thought leaders for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. If you'd like to be a guest on any of our shows, go to guest.ExitCoachRadio.com. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Back, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. My next guest is Christopher Dedayan, and Chris is joining us as a peak performance expert and professional speaker who's devoted his life to helping high achievers manage stress, increase productivity, and have more energy. Chris, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me. Real pleasure to have you today.
Yes, thank you very much, Bill. It is a pleasure as well. Looking forward to our conversation.
Same here, Chris. Tell us, tell our listeners a little bit more about you and your background and how you help folks.
Absolutely. So, a bit like you mentioned, I am a professional speaker, peak performance business and life coach, and a learning disability advocate. And essentially, how I help people to really optimize their lives in every sense of the way, from the professional side to the personal side, is through my coaching programs, one-on-one coaching programs, group coaching programs, as well as my speaking and consulting for organizations. So that's how I usually split out my day, and most of my work is done essentially.
When someone gets in touch with you to talk to you about working with you, what kind of things are they typically looking for, Chris? Or is it Christopher or Chris?
So my name's Christopher, but you could definitely call me Chris. There's no issues at all with that, Bill. Thank you for asking.
Okay.
So yeah, so usually when people reach out to me, it's because they know that they're either achieving at very high levels, but they know there's another level. Or they might be going through a difficult moment right now in any sense of the way. That could be in their business. That could be with their organizational structure. That could be with their personal life. So they approach me to really go to the next level. That's the main thing that people approach me. And they don't necessarily say it in that way, but it's something that they feel. So that's what they're approaching me. And then we put structures and systems in their place within their lives that helps them be a better business person, helps them be a better person at home, and so on and so forth. So the main thing really comes down to that. And there is some main factors that come into that, as in, hey, you know, I want to hit this much financially for this trimester or for this year. I want to grow my organization from 5 employees to 100 employees, and so on and so forth. And then once we place the goals, we work towards it and put the strategy, the proper blueprint for them to succeed.
Excellent. So if people are saying, you know, I want to do better. I want to be a better person, be more productive, reach some goals, that type of thing, and you help build a structure around it. Now, I understand you transitioned from a real estate career to professional speaking and coaching. And I think a lot of people out there are thinking of a transition from one thing to another thing. How were you able to do that? Tell us about your journey there in that transition.
Yes, thank you, Bill, for that. And honestly, it was a kind of funny transition, as a bit like I mentioned, I'm a learning disability advocate. So I was diagnosed at 8 years old with dyslexia, and I went through an education system with that, and I managed to essentially work with that and become very successful, even though I had dyslexia and I still have dyslexia. Now, why am I saying this? It's because when I was succeeding as a broker, my speech therapist that used to follow me in high school called me to ask me a question about the property that she wanted to sell. And after a few minutes of talking, She's like, wow, Chris, it seems like you're doing very well. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. Everything's going great. And she's like, I'm the keynote speaker at this event put together by the Learning Disability Institute of Quebec. I would love for you to come and tell us your story as a successful dyslexic entrepreneur. So I'm like, absolutely, we'll definitely do that. The same evening, Bill, she sends me a email with the subject line, Chris, I don't think you should do this speech because there's still a lot of people that have a negative misconception with learning disabilities and dyslexia. Now, I knew she was coming out of a place of love and a place of protection, but I told her, you know what, I'm going to call you Monday. I think I should be doing this speech, and we'll talk about it. So Monday rolls around, give her a call, and I tell her, listen, Brigitte, I'm like, if I am not doing this, I'll be fake, and I will not be helping the students that are on the school benches, and I'm not going to be helping the next generation. I'm like, that's not who I am. I'm like, I have to do the speech. And she's like, absolutely, I agree with you. I just wanted to come from you. So this is the first time that I was going to go on stage. Initially, she told me there was going to be about 200 people. I walk into this room. There wasn't 200 people. There was over 1,000 people. Now, my heartbeat is going. I've never necessarily been on stage. I've prepared myself for that, but still didn't know what to expect. And once I got on stage, I realized in some way, shape, or form, almost like omens in your life, like the universe was preparing me for this moment. And the second that I got off that stage, just got great, great, great feedback, and I knew that that's what I had to shift my life towards. And from that moment on, I started working on a plan to how to leave brokerage and go into the speaking and the coaching industry, which I had no idea about. I didn't even know if I could make money within this. I was very successful in brokerage, and it was actually one of my coaches that saw me do that first speech. He's like, Chris, listen, you hired me to make you a top-end real estate broker. He's like, that's not what we're going to do. He's like, you're a world-class speaker and coach. So that's how that transition kind of happened within my life.
Wow. That's amazing. That's a great story. You know, that's a life changer, right? When you walk out and all of a sudden you go from an audience of a couple hundred to 1,000, that's a big number. What steps did you take to overcome your learning disability? Like I said, you had it as a child, you still have it, but what have you learned along the way as far as dealing with it, and what do you do?
Yeah, so essentially for people that don't know what dyslexia is, essentially it's a learning disability linked up with your reading and writing skills. It's not that I'm illiterate, far from it, but for me, reading demands a much more higher level of energy than, let's call it, somebody that doesn't have dyslexia. So because I was diagnosed at a young age, my parents, God bless them, saw that at 8 years old, I was put in a proper school that had the proper structure. And what the main thing was, I just learned how to learn for me. And that's what real education is. Everybody learns a different way. Once you figure out how you learn, then you have the proper tools and the structure to go about it, then you're going to succeed. And there's a lot of actually successful entrepreneurs that are dyslexic, such as Richard Branson, such as Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank, and his colleague as well, the one that does FUBU, Damon John as well. So we have a dyslexics are like very inducively towards entrepreneurial because we see things a bit differently, like thinking outside of the box. Our brains are structured in a certain way that we see that. So what I have to do is really figure out what are my strengths, what are my weaknesses. Let me play within my strengths and let me hire my weaknesses. It's as simple as that. So for me, like I said, reading and writing is not necessarily my strength, but I have systems, especially with nowadays with technology. I have Write to Speech that I do a lot of that. I have things to read. I have my secretary. I have my team. All my blogs are essentially done by my copywriter. I know that my talent is speaking. So I do like, hey, I do my YouTube videos, do my content there. And then from there, I break it down with my blog writer. So it's just figuring out what you're good at, do what you're good at, and hire the other people that are great at doing what they're doing. That's going to help out like essentially the whole mission and vision of the organization. So that's kind of how I deal with it and go about it.
Useful in life itself and life in general. That's great. And you learn how to check yourself and when you need to, and when to trust that, because like you said, it's only a disability in a certain structure. I'm sure looking at things differently has been a tremendous asset for you in other parts of your life. Now, when you work with individuals, how do you teach them how to hit their personal peak performance levels?
So, yes, I mean, Bill, how do I do that? Obviously, there's like a process behind that, but how to hit their peak level, honestly, a lot of it has to do with clarity. You kind of mentioned it, like, hey, it's great for everybody, not just with dyslexia, to know their strengths and their weaknesses. That's linked up with clarity. So the first thing I do when somebody comes within one of my coaching programs with me or one of my coaches is that we look at their limiting beliefs. number one thing we do. Because every single individual, I don't care who you are, guy, girl, you're North American, you're from Africa, from wherever you are, everybody has limiting beliefs. And these limiting beliefs have been given to you through your, or your, where you're born, through your parents, and some things are being given to you by your self-beliefs. So we have to look at them, spot it out, and say, hey, is this right? Is this supporting me or it's not? Then take it up and replace it. So first thing we do is that. Second thing, we look at exactly what they want to do. What is the goal? How can we structure that goal to go get it? So we put a specific blueprint for their success, and then we start following it. Third thing, we put systems in place. Because the only way you're going to get this is through habits and rituals. If you have the proper habit, the proper rituals, that's what's going to give you the success. A lot of people think that, oh, my God, you become a millionaire because you did this one big thing or you did this one big deal. No, it's about doing the small things in a repetitive way every single day. That's going to compound over time. That's going to make you successful in every area of your life, not only business, in your spirituality, in your family, and so on and so forth. And then finally, you just get ready to create massive value to the marketplace, create massive impact, which is going to bring you massive income. So those are like the four underlining. Obviously, we go in so much more depth and it's very personalized. But if you look at that four little like guidelines, you're going to hit it. You're going to succeed. There's no way around it.
That's great. Very succinct. A good overview of the system. And that's exactly what our listeners are looking for is, you know, how do I do that? You've told us the four great steps. You know, another area people are, you know, finding themselves dealing with a lot of stress these days. They want to increase their productivity and have more energy. And I hear from a lot of business owners who say, you know, when we first started off, remote working was great. We didn't miss a beat. Everything was fine. As time has gone on with COVID, it seems like people need a little bit more of a shot in the arm. You know, they miss the coming into the office, the pep talks and all that kind of stuff, and they're feeling more stressed out because things are happening around them. So give us some steps on dealing with stress and increasing productivity and having more energy, because it sounds like you have a lot.
Yes, Bill, honestly, I love that question, and there's so many things I could talk about this until tomorrow morning, but you kind of got it spot on. Now, it's been a while that we're in this pandemic, and like you said in the beginning, maybe it was cool, like, oh my God, I don't need to wake up and go in my car and drive and all that stuff. There was that aspect. Now that is kind of, you know, going off being like, hey, I'm back to a certain, you know, routine, which is being at home, and if you do not put the proper anchors within your life, even in your home, you're not going to succeed because there's too many things that could either attract you or, you know, take you out of your workflow and whatever the case is. Now, the best way to do so, I'm a huge fan and I'm a geek about human biology and more specifically your brain. You have to figure out how your brain works so you could use it to your advantage. That's the biohacking behind it. Now, why am I saying this? As you understand that there's moments within the day that you're so much more creative, that you're so much more energetic, you'll be utilizing these moments at a higher level. This is linked up with your brain waves. So you understand what are the best moments to do certain things within tasks. Now, if we're talking about energy, we talked about systems before, right? Moving once a day is a must. When we're talking about moving, it could be a workout, it could be going for a walk, it could be whatever. Because as you're doing that, once it's done, because your body's under pressure once you're working out, moving, walking, whatever, once you stop doing that, your body, your brain specifically, releases serotonin, which is the happy drug. So your energy level goes up. Second thing you could do as well is breathing exercises. So you could do box breathing, which if you guys don't know, essentially it's a 4-second breathe out, 4-second hold, and then a 4-second exhale. These types of things are going to increase the oxygen within your brain. So you're not going to be as foggy and your energy level is going to go up. So it's understanding how to utilize this vehicle that the universe has given you, which is your body, to your advantage. If you're sitting down in the wrong way, if you're not putting yourself in the proper environment to be productive, it's because you just don't know how to do so. But once you have the proper structure, once you have certain support on that end, then you're going to succeed. It's understanding what is the environment that we're in. I hope that was clear, Bill. Did you get some good points from that?
Oh yeah, I'm taking notes like crazy. It's really, really great stuff. I really appreciate the way you succinctly and clearly bring the overviews to us. So, what are some of the common mistakes you find that people make when they're trying to transform their life? It's, you know, it's never easy for someone to go from being a real estate professional to a professional speaker. What can derail that, and what can people do about that when they say, I want to – because I'll tell you why. Let me frame that, Chris. We have a lot of baby boomer owners who are thinking, okay, I want to go from being a business owner, I want to exit my business, and I want to do something else significant with my life. but I don't know how to get from point A to point B, and I'm afraid I'll make mistakes along the way. So what mistakes do people make, and how can they deal with that?
Okay. I love that. So thank you for bringing a bit more clarity, because I'll be able to pinpoint an answer to a bit more eloquently on this end. First and foremost, to believe that you're not going to make mistakes is completely irrational. You are going to make mistakes, so just get ready for that. And mistakes are, in fact, just teaching you. So once you make a mistake, learn from it. It's a lesson. So right off the bat, don't ever think you're not going to make mistakes. I could talk to you until tomorrow morning about the mistakes that I did from leaving brokerage to becoming a professional speaker and how I would do it differently if I knew. But that's not what life is, right? So first and foremost, that's one. Second thing, you do want to diminish or minimize as much as possible the mistakes. How do you do that? You model. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. Model somebody else. So if you're looking at, hey, let me give you my example. I was a broker. I went into the professional speaking field. I'm like, how has this transition been done before? Who has done it before? How have they done it? I model their business. How are they approaching it? How are they doing it? And then you look at what they've done and you do it. Now, another thing within this, once you're looking at this, this becomes like a very slippery slope here if you're not aware of it. Do not compare somebody's step 75 to your step 17. Like, I could be looking at Tony Robbins right now, which in my eyes is one of the greatest speakers in my industry and so
mm-hmm.
on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
Tony Robbins has like 40 years of experience over than what I have. I'm 31. He's like almost double the years that I've existed. He's been doing the field that I'm in now. But was there a point that Tony Robbins was where I was? And the answer is yes. And does it mean that I'm going to become Tony Robbins? No, that's not the goal. Not at all. My goal is to be who I'm going to be. And everybody should look at it that way. So when you're looking at it, understand that, listen, you're looking at it to learn about somebody else, to learn about what you need to do. Understand that where they are, they're at step 75, you're at step 17, and the doubts, the fears, the insecurity that you're feeling, everybody has felt it and everybody still feels it. Once again, you think Tony Robbins doesn't have insecurities? You think Tony Robbins doesn't have doubts, even though he's a stud superstar? He does. He talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second
mm-hmm.
that those doubts, those insecurities happen, he knows exactly what to do to shift his psychology and his physiology, because he's learned the body. He's learned the mind. This is what you need to do. We're not telling you how to get there. We're giving you the blueprint. It's like the same adage, you know, I'm not giving you a fish. I'm teaching you how to fish. Once you know how to fish and when you're hungry, you just get up and you go fish. That's the reality.
There you go. You know, and, you know, there's a great cartoon out there that everybody, I'm sure, has seen where it says this is how people think the greats' lives go. And it's kind of a smooth arrow to the up and to the right. And in fact, it's more like a jagged arrow. And that's actually an icon you use for the logo for your Peak Performance Greatness show, the podcast that you do. Tell us a little bit more about that. Who do you interview, and why should our listeners listen to Peak Performance Greatness show as well? What are they going to hear about?
Bill, first and foremost, thank you for that. Second of all, why am I saying that? It's because I'm actually surprised that you know about that, because legit, we're working on it and it's supposed to be launched in the next couple of days. So I'm guessing it's up on my website. My team's been working on it. So you're actually announcing me something that it's been up on my website. So this is a new podcast that we just started, because like I said, everything for me is about that peak performance. And everybody, I thoroughly believe everybody has some ideology, some tricks, some methods that they could share. So I created this platform to get people to on the show and share what is their peak performance, because everybody learns from everybody else. So if they've learned and they're talking about, hey, I've done this and this is how I live my peak performance, these are things that we need to share and learn about, and I take notes as well. So I created that just to create an amazing community of high-achieving entrepreneurs, CEOs, executives, entrepreneurs, wherever you are within your journey, and just to share information. So if you guys are interested, you could definitely go check out my website at christopherdedan.com, and you guys will see it there. If not, just go on peakperformancegreatness.com, and it will direct you directly there. And if you're interested in being a guest, if you think you could bring some value, 100%, you could sign up as well, and we'll get you through the process of potentially being a guest on our show. So that's what that aspect is, and it's legit just starting off, so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. I think it's going to be a great journey for you. As I've been fortunate enough to listen to guests like you and take notes, it helps me and it helps our listeners, and it's a win-win for everyone. And I wish you all the best with that. What's the best way otherwise for our listeners to get in touch with you, Christopher?
Honestly, Bill, I mean, everywhere on social media, you could just follow me at Christopher Deyan. My family name is D-E-D-E-Y-A-N. The best place, if you want to learn more tricks about everything we talked about peak performance, about entrepreneurship, about personal growth, go check out my YouTube channel, once again, at Christopher Deyan. And on all the other platforms as well, I'm at Christopher Deyan. And you can go check me out on my website, ChristopherDeyan.com. So that would be the best way. If you guys are interested to work either through one of my coaching programs or one of my speakers or whatever the case is, once again, it's the website, and we'll be able to direct you and hopefully support you to go to the next level.
Well, excellent job today. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure. I hope you'll come back a few months down the line, let us know how the podcast is going, and share some more tips with our listeners, because it's been a really fascinating interview. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Bill, thank you very much. Whenever you want, write me up, and we'll definitely make it happen again. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Thank you so much for listening today. It's been a real pleasure to have you with me so far, and my next guest is waiting patiently on the line for us. Tony Martignetti is a leadership coach, entrepreneur, idea generator, and people connector, and he brings together practical experience, formal training, and extreme curiosity to elevate leaders and equip them with tools to navigate through change and unlock their true potential. Now, Tony loves guiding people to find clarity in their lives so they're energized, fully present, and unstoppable. And when leaders unlock their potential and lead from a place of inspired purpose, they impact and inspire everyone around them. And he's dedicated himself to live an inspired life. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit about what he did before he got into coaching. Tony, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I think we're going to have an interesting discussion. I hope our listeners have a pen in hand and a large blank piece of paper to take some notes. Tell us a little bit about your background as a finance and strategy professional and how you transitioned into becoming inspired purpose coaching.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled. So, yeah, it's been an interesting transition. When people look at that, they say, like, wow, coming from finance, like, what would make you want to work in the place of, like, really shaping people and helping people to create what they're doing right now? And it's been a long journey, but I felt like the square peg in the round hole for most of my life. When I was in the world of finance and strategy, I was working with biotech companies mostly, and people used to always say to me, oh my gosh, you know, you're not the typical finance person. You know, you have this thing about really, you know, seeing people. You really want to know what makes people tick. You want to know how to connect people to their passion, things like that. And I would just do it like almost naturally. But when people say, well, you know, you're different, I would say, like, yeah, well, whatever. My job is finance. This is what I do. almost like robotically, I would come back to that.
Yeah.
My job is finance. This is what I do. It's something I've come to realize that, you know, a lot of us, by definition of our jobs, we put ourselves in boxes and we start to program ourselves to think, this is how I should be calling myself. This is what I should be doing. This is how I should be. And I started to come to the realization that I was in the wrong place when I started to burn out and get depressed about what I was doing in the world. Although I was making great impact, and on the outside, people would see this, like, you know, this person who's, you know, rising up the ranks, getting to the C level of, in a space that is, like, making a huge impact on people's lives. Ultimately, I felt empty inside.
Interesting. I think,
yeah.
You know, I hear that from a lot of people, especially as they get into their later years, and they say, for all these years, you know, I put on a suit, and it was a business suit or whatever it was, but it was also, I was putting on my persona for the day.
Yes.
And, you know, I realized at some point in, the suit's not me, the persona's not me. I don't feel fulfilled, but I'm now making good money. I'm being successful. I'm doing the things that we're supposed to do to provide for our families. But I just there's something else that needs to come out. Is that kind of where you were?
Yes. Absolutely, and that's part of what my now my calling is around this, is to get people to see that whatever is dying to come out has to come out. And even if that means it's not about telling everyone, hey, you need to go leave and start your own, you know, company, or you need to go start your own thing, but it's about expressing yourself fully in whatever place that might be. Maybe it means really understanding what you're doing in your work and expressing that fully and not holding back, embracing, uh-huh. for lack of a better word, embracing your voice. And some people just hold themselves back because they say, hey, I'm doing, you know, I'm making good money. You know, I shouldn't rock the boat, because if I rock the boat, then I might be in a place where things would be unsettled.
Yeah, just another $1 million. Just another $1 million, and I'll be done. You know what's interesting, I think, these days, Tony, is that we've been given a gift of medical technology and science that allows us to live longer, right? So allows people to live longer. So we hear a lot from people, and as a matter of fact, AARP, of course, you know, the largest, you know, age 50 plus organization, paid membership organization in the world, has created a whole section of their website called Life Reimagined, because people are saying, I know what I did, but it wasn't who I am, but I'm not sure I know who I am, and I'm not sure how to best utilize what's available out there with all the technology. And I'll give you an example, and then I'll shut up. But an example is, you know, it used to be, you know, the dream job was being a starter at a golf course, for instance, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a lot of people were greeters at Walmart or whatever. But now you don't have to leave what you loved. Maybe you loved what you were doing, but you just want to do the consulting part of it and turn that into a more of a career, and leave behind all the running of the business, the people problems. And these days with the internet, you can have a worldwide audience and either learn about something like on your podcast that we'll talk about in a second, or actually do something and find a community of people that knit left-handed with blue thread, if that's what you're into.
Exactly. Exactly. I love that.
So it's interesting.
No,
so
you're
absolutely
right.
Mm-hmm, how do you help your clients discover what their suit should look like?
Yeah, well, first of all, it starts with, like, really doing some stepping back of where you are right now and assessing what you have already accumulated in your life. Where are the things that have lit you up? I always say that your life is a research laboratory. It doesn't. It helps that I come with this background of, I was a pre-med major. I have this science background, too. But I look at the world like a lab, and everything you've done is research, and now everything you do from this point on is also research. So it's best not to jump in and say, okay, now I'm just going to throw everything out and start anew and just completely jump onto the unknown and make things happen. Now, some people do that. In fact, some of what I did was like that. But the reality is a better way is to test the waters and do experiments. And that starts by just looking at what you currently have in front of you and see what's lighting you up and do more of that in little experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I can delve more into that in a moment if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that. And I think a lot of people today with virtual work, here's a visual for you. They have their business suit on top and their board shorts on underneath the camera.
Yeah.
Right? So they're kind of and this is a lot of our listeners, is they're baby boomers and saying, I want my real life back. I want more of that. And I think this virtuality helps them in a lot of ways to do that. So they can be on the Zoom call, and then as soon as it's over, they can go out and surf, for example. If that's
I love that. You paint some good visuals, which I really love. I'm like, I'm actually wanting to be out surfing right now, or, you know, actually I like climbing mountains, so I'm really cool with that too.
That's the book you're writing, right? It's Climbing the Right Mountain, Navigating the Journey to an Inspired Life, which is a great title, Climbing the Right Mountain. Tell us a little bit more about that. What's behind that?
Yeah, and it comes back to this feeling, and we've touched on this a little bit, that a lot of us, a lot of people who are at the stage where they, you know, get to the top of their field, they've singularly focused on getting to the top of their mountain and said, okay, now I'm here. I've gotten to sea level. I've gotten to this place where I thought I wanted to be, and I've done everything I could to get here. Maybe I've, you know, sacrificed my health, my time with family, my friends, and here I am. I'm looking out at the view, and I don't like it, and I have regret. I'm feeling these feelings that I've not, you know, kind of created the life that I wanted. So what can I do about it? That's what I'm trying to help people see, is that even if you do get to the top and you realize you've climbed the wrong mountain, it's not too late. You can always take your path to another mountain. And if you're still on the path to climbing your theoretical mountain, there's signs to look for, and there's different ways to climb. So that's really what that is about, is taking different ways to approach your path. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wanted to come back to what you said earlier, just for a quick moment, because you mentioned, you know, the people who, you know, may be sitting around and thinking like, oh, how can I start my, you know, my side gig and what have you. It's really, what's powerful about it is that because there's this ability to do things on the side, you know, there's this portfolio approach. You don't have to risk your day job to start something that, that lights you up, that, you know, could be something in the future. I've often talked about the person who sits at the coffee shop and, you know, is the coffee shop guitarist or musician who dreams someday of becoming like a, you know, full-time musician. Well, it starts like with just testing the waters and going and having that time at the, you know, coffee shop and playing guitar.
Right. And, you know, it seems to me that, you know, a lot of this comes from an outdated notion, perhaps, of what the work life is about, where, you know, you get your day off every once in a while or your week off. And I think now a lot more people with technology on our side have the ability to take half the day off if they want, or, you know, or compress their work into a part of the day and have more freedom. And I think that's just the song that a lot of people want to hear these days, that they're just like, how do I get some of that life back? I hear it so often. I'm sure you do too. I just want to stay home and walk the dog, you know, or go for a walk and not just rush out the door first thing, and into onto the freeway and into the stress of the situation. And I think with this intersection of social distancing and COVID and technology, this intersection that we're at, it's given a lot of people time to do that. And so I think that by reading books like Climbing the Right Mountain and really figuring out, that's where a lot of people are at. How do I find out what mountain I should be climbing, to borrow your title again? What do you talk about on you? Because you host a podcast as well called The Virtual Campfire, which I love that title. Another good image. What do you talk about there?
Yeah, so the podcast has been, to me, I feel like it's been a gift that that I've received, because I have so many great people on the show who share their stories. It really is a space for people to come on and share, you know, what was it that had brought them to the place they are now. Like, I have these people on who have been through a transformation, and they share what are called flashpoints, you know, points in their story that have ignited their gifts into the world. And we all have stories, and sometimes you have to be given a space to uncover the themes, the things that show up along your path that reveal you. And that's what the campfire is about. And campfire, first of all, there's two things about campfire which I love in terms of imagery. Fire is transformative. you transform through fire. But also, the campfire has been a place for telling stories since the beginning of time. And it's not just a place for everyday stories. It's a place for stories that are, you know, deep and honest and that stand the test of time. So the guests that I have come on are often, they've made it to some place where they're making an impact in the world, but their story tells, you know, their early beginnings, their humble beginnings, the point at which they got ignited into doing what they're doing. It's beautiful.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And I was talking with my prior guest, actually. We were talking about that, the road to success. And I heard a saying I repeat a lot, that the road to success goes directly through Crazy Town. if you can picture that, the roundabout,
yeah,
it's just—it's just like, what's going on? And you just can't get off the roundabout for a few turns around, and then, but everybody goes through that in some way, shape, or form. So I would imagine that hearing stories from people who have been through that is very therapeutic for a lot of people who are wondering what this next transition is going to be like in their life. And especially our listeners out there who are saying, you know, I know I don't want to do so much of what I've been doing and I want to do something else. I just need to find out what that is so I can exit to something, not exit from something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think it totally does. And I think part of this is also, if I could just add one big part of this that I found out through my journey of helping, you know, to tell these stories is that everyone seems to have a bit of like, nobody goes it alone. There's always people along your journey who are helping you. Sometimes it's like blatantly direct, and sometimes it's indirect, that they are there to be signposts along your journey. And part of the reason why these people come on is because they don't want people to feel like they're alone. So when you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm the only one dealing with this problem, well, guess what? You're not alone. So I think that's part of the message that I love to share about the show, is that there's this this connection that people can make through this.
Now, say if a listener wanted to get in touch, we've got a couple ways that they can get to know you better, right? They can go to your website, which is Inspired Purpose Coach. I'm sorry, my link here cuts off after Inspired Purpose Coach. How does it finish up?
.com.
Inspired. Okay. InspiredPurposeCoach.com. Okay. Easy. Okay. There it is. Okay. Now I see. So they can go there. You can go there and see some really great information and overview. To find the podcast, would they just right there on your website, InspiredPurposeCoach.com.
Yes.
Click on podcast. They can touch with you and talk to you about coaching discussions that they might want to have. Right? And
absolutely.
They can listen
to
your
conversation with people. Yeah.
When's your book coming out?
The book is coming out in late spring. Pre-orders are going to be set up very shortly, so I'll be having that all come together. This is the beauty of self-publishing. There's no one there to slap your hand when you're late.
Right. Right. Okay. Great. Right. So there's a lot of ways for people to get in touch with you and learn more about you. Again, it's by inspiredpurposecoach.com. I really would love to talk to you more in the future after your book comes out, and we can talk about what all's in the book. And in the meanwhile, again, people can listen and get to know you that way. And then, pull up a chair around the Virtual Campfire podcast with Tony Margnetti.
Exactly.
And it's great to talk with you today. Anything else you want to share with our listeners? It's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. I mean, honestly, I think the biggest thing for me is just make sure people know that, you know, we're going through some challenging times, but we're all going through it together. And that there's always someone there to have a chat with. We don't go it alone.
Excellent advice for people out there that are, you know, thinking about transformation and change and what mountain to climb. get in touch with Tony. And Tony, thanks once again for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. So please stay with us.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.